start in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Do I really have to use this? I don't care. You can't hear me? I can hear myself like echoing like 6 times. Okay, so I apologize for being sick. I blame my coworkers. But today is something that I've spoken about before to other people, and I will admit that I have recycled this before, but I do find it very, very important. And it's something that I've grown to learn over the years, and it's how I could actually stand up here and say, I do not hate anyone. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, I hate that person, I hate this person, whatever. But I could legitimately say, I don't hate anyone. And I'll tell you why throughout this presentation. And feel free, I'm not the kind of person that likes question answer periods at the end. If you have a question, just like interrupt me. I have no problem with that. And if the answer is going to be answered in this presentation, I will say that, so don't worry about that. So I called it leaving no room for hatred, and that is because we are filling our lives with something else to avoid this term of hatred. So in the church, we have several commandments. You constantly hear love one another, serve one another, forgive one another, be kind to one another, pray for one another. There's a lot of one another's, and a lot of them are doing something positive for the other person. And we face difficult people in our lives every single day, and we don't understand why, and we don't understand why they're so close to us or things like that. We don't understand why they behave a certain way. Bless you, stop smiling at me, it's creepy. We don't know why they don't show love to us. And we see these people everywhere in our lives. It could be strangers, it could be the closest people to us, it could be the random person, tunt or uncle at church that like says hi to you and just maybe spits in your face or something. But the important thing is that it does mention one another several times in the Bible. And I've heard this analogy many times. If you take the commandments and break them down, it splits up into two. One is towards God, and one is towards the other. So all of the commandments are broken down into two different categories, so loving God and loving the other. So we are Christians, so we're required to be Christ-like. So we were all made in the image and likeness of Christ, so we are supposed to carry that on from the day we're born. So we were made in the Christ-like image. We're supposed to carry that Christ-like attribute throughout the entire time we're on this earth. And the weirdest thing is that we're asked to bless those who curse us, or being kind to those that curse us. Now, there's a difference between God saying, like, love the other. And he also goes and takes that loving the other and says, love your enemies, or bless those that curse you. And I'll go into that in more detail, but it's kind of weird. Like, imagine a guy that gives you the finger while you're driving randomly, and then you're asked to bless him. It's like, oh, bless your soul. It doesn't really make sense to like everyday people, but that's exactly what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to actually bless and pray for them more than you can imagine. So how exactly can we be loving towards unloving people? Does anyone have any ideas before I go to the next slide? Amir? Give them excuses, okay. If I say okay, that means it's in here somewhere. So good job. Anyone else? Yeah? See them as? Yeah? Guess again. Okay, we'll just go through it. So I'm going to break it down a little bit into a simplistic way, and then I'm going to go into more detail. So number one is acknowledge that God puts loving people in our lives. So a lot of people say, like, oh, why does this person hate me? It's like, well, why are you focusing on that one person? Like, why don't you focus on all the people that love you and not ignore that person, but remember that God puts loving people in your life. practice with strangers and work your way in. So this seems kind of weird because usually people say like, oh, practice on your closest people before presenting in front of a crowd. But that's not what I did. I'm practicing in front of you guys before I talk to my mom and dad. Practicing with strangers is actually a lot easier because you don't have that intimate relationship with strangers, and you could actually, you'll never probably ever see them again. So why not, right? So you could say something to a stranger, and then if it works, it works. If it doesn't, on to the next. The third one is recognizing the speck. And there's a reason why I said recognizing the speck and not the plank. Shoy, can you read the verse that's there, Matthew 7:3?
And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye?
Okay, so in this verse it's saying, why don't you recognize this huge thing in your eye before recognizing this tiny, like minuscule thing that's in the person in front of you's eye? So I'm saying recognize the speck, because sometimes we think that we are the ones with the speck and they have the plank. So even if you have that speck, you should recognize it. You shouldn't just say, oh, like, they're imperfect and I'm perfect, right? And again, we're going into that in more detail in a second. So something that comes into mind a lot is the story of King David for me. King David, as you guys might know, he was hated by who? Saul. So Saul tried to kill him multiple times. And there was this love-hate relationship, but it was King David loving Saul and Saul hating King David. So at one point, King David had the opportunity to kill Saul. Now, back in that time, I mean, if you had the opportunity to kill someone that you hate, that hates you, it's like, by all means, go ahead and do it. But what King David did was he actually just ripped a piece of his garment, like he cut it with a knife, to show Saul, look what I could have done, but I chose not to because I love you. So that's something that I always remind myself, is that even when we have the opportunity to show hatred, we should never do that, and we should always show love. And then I know a lot of people are probably thinking, well, shouldn't that person be loving to me first? It's always the, like, oh, she started it, he started it. But you shouldn't ever rely on the other person. And I've learned that through many years, that I never rely on the other person to start or initiate anything. If I want something done, I'll do it myself, and I'll be the initiator. And I've seen that build many of my friendships, and I've also seen it crumble a lot of my friendships that may have not been useful to me in my spiritual life. And again, we'll go into that in a little bit of detail in a second. But does anyone have questions so far? Okay, good. I'm just gonna skip that. Okay, but I still haven't gone into that much detail about how to do it, and this is where I'm gonna touch a little bit on what Amir said. So the first one, and I want you to remember these, mainly the order, okay? So the first one is exposure. The second one is avoidance. The next one, Amir, you said make excuses for the other person. The next one is actively look and find the good. So not just necessarily finding the good, you have to actively look for it. Doing good, self-accusation, understanding that sin is a disease, accepting the person, and if all of this doesn't work, keep a safe distance. So yay, the first ones are all positive. That last one kind of scares a lot of people, but I'll tell you why it's not actually that scary. So the first one being exposure. So I don't want you to go up to someone, let's say someone repeatedly lies to you, like repeatedly, is constantly telling you all these lies, and this lie might be about you, it might not be, but I'm just telling you, if this person is a constant liar, I don't want you to go up to them and be like, hey, you're a liar, like, stop, that's not cool. Like, no, I want you to expose them in a way that you're giving them almost like the benefit of the doubt. But giving them the benefit of the doubt is kind of a separate thing, so I'll go into that a bit more. But I want you to put it into this kind of context. So you could say, I was under the impression that this is what happened because of this, but you're telling me that this happened because of this. Can you elaborate a little bit? Or can you explain, because I don't understand? So a lot of times, and this has happened to me before, where I've said something like that, and they're like, oh, wait, you're actually right, and they'll come clean, which is fine. The other times, they're like, oh, and they fall deeper into this lie. So at this stage, that's fine. Let it be, okay? You've already, at this point, pointed out what they're doing wrong, and I'm not telling you to point fingers and say, like, you're sinning and I'm not. I'm telling you that this person might be causing harm to you, and you might not know it. So at this point, you could stop, okay? Or I recommend to continue a little bit. So the next one was avoidance, okay? So avoid a specific situation. What do I mean by that? So let's say you know this person only lies or only does this certain sin when they're around this other person. So one, you could avoid being around the two of them together. Or two, you could just avoid the second person because you know the first person won't be with... Anyways, you get the point. So what I mean by that is that you're not hating the person, you're focusing on what they're doing. You're focusing on that sin, and you're making it clear to that person that you don't agree with what they're doing. Do you know the term, don't hate the sin, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin? Okay, I'm sure you've heard it before, and I've probably said it to you before. So that is exactly the situation. So you've already implied to them that you don't like what they're doing, and you've exposed what they're doing, whether they understood that exposure or not. The second thing is that you are avoiding the situation. Now, I know that this happens a lot to me, and I'll give you an example, especially with gossip. A lot of times, someone will come and start gossiping about another person to me, and I know that they'll always bring up this person. So what is the easiest thing for me to do? Very simple. Just be like, listen, I know that this might have happened and it might be true, but I'd rather not talk about it. That's it. If you feel that they're bringing up the situation often, that's when you move to the next one, which is making excuses for them or giving them the benefit of the doubt. And I do this one very often, and it's given me a lot of peace of mind. So giving the benefit of the doubt is a concession that a person or fact must be regarded as correct or justified if the contrary has not been proven. So what that means is that, in simpler terms, it's like it's not true or it's not false unless it's proven true, or it's not true unless it's proven false. Yeah, that one. I need a lot of people. I'm a scientist. I don't do that stuff. So I've seen this happen, and this is a higher level, because you're making excuses for the other person and not for yourself, and that sometimes is a lot harder to do. I've seen this happen one too many times. I don't know if you have, but have you ever looked into a car next to you and just seen the person crying? I don't know why it always happens to me, and I never know what to do in that situation. But that's when I start giving like reasons in my head. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they're doing this. Maybe they just got into a car accident. I don't know what it is, okay? I always give excuses for the other person. So what I mean by that as well, let's say you go into a store to buy something and the lineup is so long and the cashier looks like they're having the worst day of their life. I automatically empathize with them and I say, well, maybe they're here, this is their second job. Maybe they're working three jobs just to feed their family. Who knows what's going on in their life? And I'll just stand there. And a lot of people are like, oh, like when, oh, like it's been 20 minutes, it's been 3 seconds, like let's go. Like, okay, so automatically I make excuses for the other person. It might be true, it might not be. I'm literally telling myself that it is, but And then we have to recognize that God has given us opportunities to empathize with the other person. So how does this tie into people that don't love us and how we should show love to them? Let's say someone is treating you wrongly. So automatically you can make up an excuse for them and say maybe they're just having a bad day. Maybe there's something going on in their family. We don't know. Actually, I'll get into that in a bit. We'll go into the next one. Okay, does anyone, from this picture, could you guess what it is? I already gave you the list, yeah. Yeah, good job. So finding the good in the other person and actively looking for it. A lot of times, we focus on something negative in another person, and that small, insignificant, good part of them kind of like hides in the cracks. So what we have to do as Christians is actively look and go out of our way to identify what the person does well or how that person, again, does a loving act to you. And there's a book, I think it's called The Five Love Languages. It's a really good book, but it talks about how people show love in a different way than they expect to receive. They show love in the same way that they expect to receive it. So I've experienced this with my mom, for example. I expect to receive love through effort and time. I could not care less about gifts. I could not care less about, I don't know what else, but my mom expects it with just time. So I would put in a lot of effort to my mom and not give that much time. And she was like, you don't ever show me that you love me. You don't say it enough. Marafshi. And I'm like, I just like baked a cake for like 10 hours for you and like gave it to you for your birthday. And she's like, yeah, but you didn't spend time with me on my birthday. So it's a different way of showing and receiving love. So we have to find the one good thing in that person and magnify it. So maybe that person shows love to us in a way that's so small to you, but to them it sounds huge. And we have to make sure that they understand that we recognize that. Does anyone have questions so far? Or am I just like talking to myself? Okay. The next one is after you've found the good, this goes more to anyone. So doing good for the other person, regardless of if they love you, hate you, spit at you, I don't know what, like cut you off in traffic, doesn't matter. You have to do good for the other person. I'm going to give you an example of this one, and I'm sorry I have a lot of examples, but this one, it has nothing to do with the person loving you or not. But I remember with my father of confession, I told him whenever I get into an argument with my parents, they just raise their voice. And so what do in the end? I raise my voice. So then it ends up being this huge, like, voice-raising argument that nobody hears anything because all you hear is screaming. So I told him, I was like, I don't know what to do about that because I hate when my mom screams at me, but then I just feel like she doesn't hear me, so I raise my voice. Anyways, so he said, have you ever tried to speak with a really quiet voice? I was like, no, that's stupid. Like, it doesn't make any sense. She's not even going to hear me because she's talking so loud. So he's like, okay, just try it. Give it a shot. When she's like, why did you do that? Just be like, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't know that you wanted me to. And it sounds so stupid, but in a way, they have no choice but to, like, lower their voice. Because it sounds weird that one person is yelling, the other person is really quiet. But if you maintain that really quiet, and try this on your parents, I swear it works. Mom, Dad, I'm so sorry. But that is why it's so confusing to the other person. Doing good to someone that hates you is actually confusing. It doesn't make any sense to anyone else except you, because you know what you're doing. So if someone is constantly bullying you, and I just saw a video about this, which I kind of wish I had it here. I just saw this video about how to stop bullying. And a bully would normally, what, call you an idiot, like kick you, well, actually forget the physical violence. It's more than name calling. A bully will say, like, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're an idiot, you're not smart, whatever. And then if you reply, it's be like, okay, like, that's great, I love you. Like, they're like, what are you doing? So they get so confused because it's not a reaction that they expect. They expect hatred with hatred. They don't expect the love back, okay? So I promise you, this works amazingly because it's very confusing to the other person. The next one is self-accusation. And this is a quote from St. Dorotheus of Gaza, and this is I believe a Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox saint. But I thought it was pretty relevant. Amir, could you read this?
About our own faults and do not lament our own death. As the fathers put it, we lose the power to correct ourselves and we are always at work on our neighbor. Nothing angers God so much or strips a man so bare or carries him so effectively to his ruin as calumniating, condemning, or despising his neighbor. St. Dorotheus of Gaza.
So he's just saying that we're constantly talking about the other person, but we never look at that speck that's even in our eye, even though it might be a full plank. Again, this is a higher level than even making excuses for the other person, because you're recognizing your faults. And then sometimes this is like maybe a subsection of making excuses for the other person. But sometimes you could say, like, well, how did I... Maybe they're reacting this way because of something I did. Maybe, like, they're treating me wrong because they misunderstood something I did to them. So it's a good way to maybe have a communication, if you're close to that person, of why they're treating you the way that they are. This one is understanding sin as a disease. Tamara, could you read?
You remain all the time against one another, grinding one another down, because each considers himself right and excuses himself. As I was saying, all the while keeping none of the commandments, yet expecting his neighbor to keep the law.
So, yeah, I thought this one was really, really interesting, because it's, again, pointing at the, we're always expecting one person to do something when we ourselves don't. Similar to when Christ told us to forgive our neighbors. And we're only going to be forgiven if we forgive others. And sometimes we expect the other person to forgive us, but we never forgive them. So we have to recognize, again, that sin is a disease that consumes all of us, and we're all in this together. So if they are treating you in a certain way, just understand that this is something that's taking over their life, and maybe that's something that they have to work on. The last one is accepting the other person. So in addition to understanding that sin is a disease, we have to accept the person for who they are and not what they do. So this is more divine. What I mean by that is that this is exactly what Christ did to us. So he accepted us just as we are, regardless of how many sins we do or what we have done to him. And so, like this verse says, always be humble, gentle, and patient, accepting each other in love. And the main part of this is the in love portion. So there's always, I say this a lot, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I could say to Mariam, I love you. Or I could be like, Mariam, I love you. And it's a huge difference. One, I sound crazy in the second one. But anyways, it's a very big difference how you say something. So even when you expose the person, so that's the first step, it's how you expose them that makes all the difference. It's not that you're exposing them by calling them a liar. It's exposing them by, like, kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt, saying, like, this is what I've heard. Could you elaborate? Can you explain it to me? Because I'm not smart. What else was I gonna say? Yeah, so that's it for that one. This is the one that, if all of that does not work, you keep a safe distance. So a person, let's say, and I saw this analogy online and it was kind of funny, so I'm just going to read it out. So sometimes a person's handicap and another person's handicap don't go well together until a person is able to get their handicap under control. Let's say we're all in a room. So imagine us all in a room together. And we're all handicapped. But let's say there's a person on a wheelchair. Let's say it's Tamer, who's doing wheelies uncontrollably and without looking and has lost control of himself. For safety purposes, it may be necessary for everyone to step back from Tamer. Because they're going to be hurt. Someone in the room might have the skill set to help the person, and if he does, he should do it. Another person might be able and willing to put himself in harm's way for the person. So that's exactly what Christ did. So he put himself, and he caused himself to be crucified on our behalf. So they would throw themselves in front of the person to slow him down or stop him. If we're not any of these two kinds of heroes, then until the person in the wheelchair is safely not out of control, then we should keep a distance. Okay? So the only conditions that I have for this one that are really important are three things. So one is to desire to be able to interact with the person, so still have that desire to want to talk to them. Two, have compassion for that person. And three, see the good and the value of that person as a son or daughter of Christ. So that's what Beher said. So those three things, even though you keep a safe distance, you should still have those three criteria for the other person. This one, does anyone have a question specifically on this one yet? That's good. Okay. And then something that I've heard before is sometimes you need to distance yourself from certain people. If they care, they're going to notice and wonder why. If they don't, then that gives you more ground to stand on. Okay? So the last thing, and I didn't mention this throughout the entire topic, is prayer, but it is one of the most important and crucial parts of this whole process. So I'll just read this one. Actually, no, I won't because I'm sick. Right?
How then can this be put right? And animosity with my neighbor by prayer right from the heart for the one who had annoyed him, such as, O God, help my brother and me through his prayers. In this, he is interceding for his brother, which is a sure sign of sympathy and love. He is humiliating himself by asking help through his brother's prayers. Where there is sympathy and love and humility, how can wrath and other passions develop?
So this verse, or this prayer, is actually really, it's really deep in a way that, like, I've never prayed for someone before using something like this. So just to summarize what he's saying, he says, oh God, help my brother and me through his prayers. So it's saying, like, first of all, help me and help him, but it's through the other person's prayers. So it's putting yourself so low that even the person that hates you, you're hoping that he prays for you too. So that is something that is very important, is that we always pray for each other. And we always hear, like, that tante or uncle at church, pray for me. Like, okay, we're actually supposed to do that. We're supposed to pray for each other, because that's one of the most beautiful things about the Coptic Church, is that it's a communal church, and it's very, very community and unity oriented. So we're supposed to all be in this together, because we're all sinning together, unfortunately. But we're supposed to recognize that love for each other should grow up, like, above and beyond anything else. That's it. Does anyone have any questions? Yeah, that's it. Right. Any question? I will not answer in French, though. Oh, 30 minutes on the dot. I'm so proud of myself. No questions? That's great. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jessica. I just, like, as she was talking, I took notes. I think there is nothing wrong between the like and the love. Liking someone and loving someone is completely different. We know that, right? There is nothing wrong with not liking people, like the way they do, the way they think. But the love should not be touched. Do we all agree on that? And this is sometimes confuses us, because we think that because we don't like people, then there is something wrong. No, not liking other people's way of doing, or that's okay, unless if anyone disagrees with me, right? So, but the love deep inside, if there is hatred, then there is something wrong. So that's my first point. And the second point is, like when she gave the example of, like, you know, let's say you're driving and someone gives you the finger, and how are you supposed to love them? It's very difficult. Like, you know, it is very difficult. There is only one solution to that. I don't know if you mentioned it and I was just like outsider. What really helps us love someone who could rate as an enemy to us? There is only one solution, to be honest with you. Like, how can you, because it really does not make sense and it's very difficult, how can you love someone who is an enemy? There's a game happening, actually. We are ruining it. So, what is the ingredient that is missing here for someone to be able to love an enemy? Them. You said something, so. Okay, come on, guys, think. Christ, yes. So it's just like, it's either you have a godly life or you don't have a godly life. If you don't have a godly life, it's very difficult to love an enemy. Does it make sense? And because I said that, and it makes sense, I think, you can use this enemy as a test for yourself to know how far or how close you are from God. It's a very good test, actually. Like, you know, if I have hatred in my life, then there is still something in my faith journey that is missing, and I don't have this godly life yet. I am still working on it. I probably hoping to attain, but just like I'm not there yet. It's a good test. If you have hatred in your heart towards people, you cannot have a godly life. I said towards people, not towards the sin, because yes, we hate the sin, as she said, like hate the sin, but don't hate the sinner. So if you have hatred towards anyone, whether it's just like, you know, a friend or a family member or whatever, you still need to work on your godly life. It's missing. It's just like I didn't mean it's missing, and like, you know, it's all missing, but you're still needing to work on it. The more you have forgiveness and the more you have acceptance for what qualifies as an enemy, you are on the right track with your godly life. Do we agree on that? Okay. You're too quiet. Huh? No, I know. It means that you just like covered it all. Okay. Well, we're going to pray, and then you guys are... There's no pizza because no one raised the hand, so I did not order pizza. I'm sorry. But we can still hang together downstairs. Okay. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, we thank you, God, for our gathering and for your presence among us tonight. Give us the power to overcome all selfishness in ourselves. Give us this magic love that could just forgive even the enemy. Help us in our life and guide us through the intercession of our pure Virgin Mary and all the saints who pleased you since the beginning. Hear us when we pray thankfully. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom, thy will be done on earth. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.